So imagine, right? You are a 19-year-old recruit on a military base,
Okay.
and you're struggling. I mean, maybe it is the intense pressure, or maybe you're clashing with your unit, or maybe you're just, trying to figure out how to map out a career in this massive machine. You desperately need advice.
Right.
But the only person you are technically supposed to talk to is the commanding officer.
Yeah.
The exact same person who writes your performance review and basically dictates your entire future.
Which is, I mean, it's a huge problem. It's the ultimate bottleneck of the traditional military hierarchy.
Exactly. So what do? You stay completely silent. And that is just a recipe for isolation.
Yeah, because the chain of command, well, it's brilliant for executing orders during a crisis,
Yeah.
but it is terrible for fostering any kind of vulnerability or human development.
Right. And if you've been with us for the first three parts of this deep dive into the Royal New Zealand Air Force, you know they recognize this exact problem.
They absolutely did.
They realized, hey, we need a mentoring culture that exists completely outside that rigid chain of command. But here is the massive problem we are tackling today.
How do you actually pull that off?
Exactly. Because strong mentoring cultures do not just happen by accident.
No, they certainly do not. I mean,
Oh.
you can't just throw a bunch of motivated aviators into a room, tell them to be vulnerable, and then just hope for the best.
Right. So today we're looking at how the Air Force re-engineered their entire organizational structure to solve this. I mean, they took this organic, delicate human connection and built a massive logistical system to scale it.
Across thousands of personnel.
Yeah, across thousands of personnel, multiple bases, and they did it without turning the whole thing into, a sterile bureaucratic machine.
Which is incredibly rare, by the way, because usually when a large organization tries to scale a grassroots initiative like this,
The passion just gets replaced by policy, right?
exactly. The human connection gets buried under paperwork.
Yeah.
But the RNZAF managed to achieve these international gold standards in mentoring while completely protecting the authentic essence of the relationship. It's a masterclass in designing for scale without losing humanity.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Let's get into the mechanics. Because to understand how you keep a human connection alive inside a machine built for national defense, you have to look at how the system is actually wired.
Right.
And the first massive hurdle any soft skills program faces in a military environment is authority. Like if a program doesn't have teeth, it gets ignored.
Yeah, totally.
So where does this mentoring initiative actually get its power?
Well, it gets its power from the very top. I mean, every strong structure needs an anchor, right?
Yeah.
And for this program, that anchor is the sponsor.
Okay.
And they didn't just pick any senior officer to be the sponsor. They chose the warrant officer of the Air Force.
Which, for those listening who might not be deep into military rankings, the Warrant Officer of the Air Force, or the WOAF, is a massive deal.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. This isn't just an officer who came in with a university degree. This is the most senior enlisted person in the entire Air Force.
Exactly.
They came up through the ranks. They know exactly what it feels like to be that 19-year-old recruit sweeping the hangar floor.
Right. And they're the direct, respected link between the absolute highest command and the people on the ground.
Right.
So by making the WOAF the strategic owner of the mentoring program, the Air Force sends this unavoidable signal. This isn't just a fringe optional HR exercise.
It's mandatory, well, not mandatory to join, but mandatory to respect.
Exactly. When the WOAF champions it, it is a strategic priority. It tells every single person on every base, this matters at the highest level.
But it goes beyond just having a powerful figurehead, right? Because looking at the organizational changes they made around 2022, they took the entire mentoring program and permanently embedded it inside the Directorate of People and Culture.
Yeah, that structural move is vital. By sitting inside that directorate, the mentoring program is no longer a standalone side project.
Right.
It becomes completely intertwined with the broader long-term goals of the military. So think about things like diversity and inclusion initiatives, or empowering the local indigenous culture within the ranks, or even transition support for personnel who are preparing to leave the military and return to civilian life.
So instead of just, I don't know, downloading a cool new widget onto the military's operating system, they actually plugged the mentoring program directly into the core operating system itself.
That is a perfect way to look at it.
It suddenly has access to the budget, the institutional memory, and all the core functions of the Air Force. But wait, placing a warm relationship-based program inside a directorate? Doesn't that sound a bit clinical? Like planting a delicate community garden right in the middle of a corporate lobby?
I get why you'd say that, but if this program was just operating on the fringes, driven purely by the goodwill of a few passionate people,
Right.
it might be beautiful for a season.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment there's a budget cut or a leadership change or a global crisis, it would be the very first thing on the chopping block.
I see.
Embedding it into the directorate provides institutional armor. It actually protects the humanity of the program by giving it deep organizational roots.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And there's a theme in their strategic documents that perfectly captures this idea. It's an indigenous concept from New Zealand that basically translates to weave the people together.
It's a profound concept.
Yeah.
And you can see how the structure acts as the literal loom for that weaving.
Yeah. But here's where the rubber meets the road. I mean, having a powerful sponsor and deep organizational roots is great on paper.
Sure.
But the warrant officer of the Air Force cannot manually schedule coffee chats for thousands of people, right?
No, absolutely not.
They cannot walk a young technician through a crisis of confidence on a Tuesday afternoon. So how do you bridge the gap between this high-level strategy and two people actually sitting down together?
Well, that requires a completely different mechanism. If you look at the early days of this initiative, back around the 2008 pilot program...
Right, the early days.
This entire thing was run by passionate volunteers. I mean, these were people juggling the administration of the mentoring program on top of their highly demanding military day jobs.
Which is a classic trap. You see this in the corporate world all the time.
Oh, constantly.
An incredible grassroots project starts up, everyone is super excited, and then the organizers completely burn out because they're doing two full-time jobs. Passion only fuels the engine for so long.
Precisely. And the Air Force recognized that volunteer burnout was a massive systemic risk. So by 2014, they established a part-time mentoring coordinator.
Okay.
And eventually, as the scale demanded it, they evolved this into a full-time program manager.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this person is the operational bridge. They aren't just sending out emails. They are handling global networking with other militaries. They're maintaining the policies, managing the budget for training, and collecting all the data.
But they don't do this alone, right? The program manager answers to the RNZF Mentoring Steering Group. Now, when I first saw this in the sources, I balked a little. The steering group is made up of the Wolf, the Director of People and Culture, the program manager, and representatives from the bases.
Right.
Wait. A steering group of top brass officers listening to young recruits. Doesn't a steering group sound like peak bureaucracy? How do they avoid bogging the program down in red tape? In most organizations, a group like that is just a suggestion box that goes straight into a shredder.
What's fascinating here is how they avoid exactly that. The steering group does not rely on personnel stepping out of line to complain to a general.
Okay, so how do they get the feedback?
They rely on structured, mandatory touch points. Every single mentoring pair undergoes surveys at the 6-month and 12-month marks.
Ah, so the feedback is baked into the actual life cycle of the relationship.
Yes, exactly. They gather real-world data directly for the participants. They ask, you know, are mentees struggling to find time to meet?
Right.
Is a specific training module confusing? Is a certain base under-resourced? The steering group looks at that data, and they adjust the structure.
Oh, I see.
They aren't there to mandate how people should feel. They are there to remove the friction. The core philosophy is that the structure must serve the people, not the other way around.
Okay, so the steering group is the feedback loop, and the program manager handles the logistics. But that still leaves a massive geographical and cultural problem.
How so?
Well, a program manager sitting in a headquarters office in Wellington cannot realistically understand the interpersonal dynamics of a maintenance crew on a remote base hundreds of miles away.
Oh, definitely not.
So how do you actually get the right people in the room together?
That is where the local teams come in. They establish mentoring advisory teams, or MATs, on every single base.
At MATs, and these are volunteers, right?
They are, but they are highly trained volunteers. And to understand why these teams are the absolute heartbeat of the program's success, we really have to go back to the original pilot in 2008.
Right, the pilot program.
Yeah, they launched it at Base Auckland with just 15 mentoring pairs, and they deliberately launched it on ANZUS Day, which is April 25th.
Okay. And for context, ANZUS Day is a deeply significant day of remembrance in New Zealand and Australia. It honors those who served and died in military operations. So launching on that specific day grounds the entire mentoring concept in a legacy of service and mutual support.
Exactly. But they didn't just open the doors and hope 15 pairs would randomly form.
Right.
The local MAT at Base Auckland hand-curated that first group. They actively went out, identified mentees who could really benefit, and paired them up to ensure the pilot was an undeniable success.
Which it was.
It was. And when the glowing evaluations came back, it proved the concept worked completely outside the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
But it also proved something else. You cannot run a nationwide program without local intelligence.
Yeah, and I was reading through the operational handbook on these mentees, and I was just shocked by how seriously they take this.
In what way?
Well, usually when a company says, we have a volunteer committee, it just means whoever shows up to the meeting with donuts, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
But the Air Force gives these local teams a hyper-specific division of labor.
Oh, you mean the specific roles?
Yes. The relationship manager role, for instance. On every base, there is a designated volunteer on the MAT whose entire job is engineering the matches.
Right.
This isn't just some algorithm looking at a spreadsheet. This is a human being sitting down, looking at a young aviator's profile, and realizing, okay, this recruit is struggling with confidence. They don't need someone in their exact trade to teach them technical skills.
Exactly.
They need this 40-year-old logistics veteran who went through the exact same crisis of confidence 15 years ago.
That is the magic of local intelligence. A centralized database in Wellington cannot read the nuance of human struggle.
No, of course not.
But the relationship manager on a local base knows the personalities. They know the quiet veterans who have incredible wisdom to share. And they know the new recruits who are just too intimidated to ask for help.
And because they divide the labor, I mean, they have separate people handling the local marketing, running the database, coordinating guest speakers. No single volunteer gets crushed under the workload.
Right. It empowers the bases to actually innovate, which leads to incredible organic growth. I mean, look at what happened at Base Ohakia.
Yes. I loved this part in the sources. The Ohaki Emmet just independently decided to launch a casual lunch and learn initiative.
Yeah, it wasn't a top-down mandate at all.
It was just a local idea to get people in a room with some food and talk about mentoring. And it was so successful at breaking the ice that the central organization took notice. And suddenly, that local grassroots idea became a replicable model for networking events across the entire Air Force.
It proved that when you give local teams the right structure and the right resources, they will build the community for you.
Absolutely.
But this introduces a terrifying risk for any large organization.
Quality control.
Exactly. Quality control. If Base Auckland is running their program one way, and Base Ohakia is doing something completely different, and another base is just making it up as they go,
you suddenly have 15 different definitions of what mentoring actually is.
Right. The passion is there, but the standard completely fractures. And in a military organization, lack of standardization is dangerous.
So how did they fix that?
The RNZAF realized that local passion was creating a quality control nightmare. That is why they built the Training Management Group, or the TMG, in 2018.
Okay, the TMG.
Their sole purpose is to be the guardian of the standard. They are the ones who approve the facilitators teaching the workshops. They maintain all the training materials. But most importantly, they ensure that the Air Force's internal training is perfectly aligned with international best practices.
And they didn't just aim for good enough, did they?
No, they went all out.
Because in 2014, they became the first military organization in the world to receive gold accreditation from the International Standards for Mentoring Programs and Employment.
Which is incredible.
And then in 2018, they went for accreditation with the European Mentoring and Coaching Council, the EMCC, and they scored a perfect 100%.
It's a staggering achievement for a military body.
Hold on, though. Here is where it gets really interesting, and I have to call this out.
Okay, go ahead.
They got a 100% score from a European Corporate Coaching Council. I mean, I'm sorry, but applying European corporate HR metrics to a military mentorship program sounds like the absolute fastest way to kill its soul.
I completely understand why you would think that.
Doesn't that just turn the whole thing into a sterile box-ticking exercise? Like, everyone is just using corporate buzzwords instead of actually talking to each other.
It sounds like it would, right?
Right.
But you have to look at what the EMCC is actually measuring.
Okay.
They require programs to train their mentors in 8 core competencies. And these aren't corporate buzzwords like synergy or optimization.
Okay, so what are they?
They are profound psychological relational skills, like active listening, deep self-awareness, and most importantly, managing professional boundaries. Think about what it takes to retrain a military mind. You have a 45-year-old seasoned flight lieutenant sitting down with a 20-year-old mechanic. The military instinct of that lieutenant is to bark orders fix the problem immediately and tell the kid what to do.
Right. Here's the manual. Just follow the steps.
Exactly. But the EMCC competencies train that lieutenant to suppress that instinct. It teaches them how to ask open-ended questions, how to hold space for the mentee to arrive at their own conclusions.
Oh, wow.
And crucially, it teaches them how to recognize when a problem is beyond their scope. If that 20-year-old is dealing with severe trauma or a mental health crisis, the training ensures the mentor knows exactly where the boundary is and how to guide them to professional counseling rather than trying to fix it themselves.
Oh, wow. Okay, so they aren't standardizing the conversation itself. They're standardizing the emotional intelligence required to have the conversation safely.
Precisely. By forcing every single mentor on every single base to meet these strict international standards, the structure creates profound psychological safety. That 19-year-old recruit we talked about at the very beginning, they know that no matter who they are paired with, that mentor has been rigorously trained to listen without judgment and respect their absolute confidentiality.
The structure is like the fence that allows the authentic human connection to run free safely inside the yard.
That's a great analogy, yeah.
That completely flips my perspective on it. The bureaucracy isn't there to stifle the relationship. It is there to protect it.
Yes.
But that brings us to the ultimate friction point. We have this beautiful, psychologically safe ecosystem, but it still physically exists on a military base, right?
Right.
Surrounded by the traditional, rigid chain of command. How do these two completely opposite cultures coexist without colliding?
This is perhaps the most delicate structural balancing act of the entire operation. Because, you know, you cannot dismantle the chain of command. It is literally how a military functions.
Right. The chain of command has to be able to give orders. But mentoring requires a mentee to be able to say, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing and I'm terrified. Which is really hard to do if you think the chain of command is listening.
The Air Force handles this through incredibly clear standard operating procedures. They draw a hard, impenetrable line between the mentoring process and performance management.
Okay, so how does that work in practice?
The commanding officers are actually expected to be highly supportive. They champion the program. They are required to give their personnel the time and resources during the workday to go to these mentoring sessions.
Okay.
But the space itself is completely sacrosanct. The chain of command builds the room, but they do not get to listen through the keyhole.
And if an issue does arise, like say a boundary gets blurred or the mentee feels uncomfortable?
They do not go to their commanding officer to resolve it. They go straight to their local MAT.
Ah, the mentoring advisory team steps in.
Exactly. The MAT acts as an independent, neutral body to troubleshoot the relationship safely, completely outside the direct line of command.
But there's one uniquely military problem that could just destroy this entire system if they hadn't designed a structural solution for it.
What's that?
Postings.
Ah, yes. Deployments and relocations. The absolute reality of military life.
Right. You build this incredible, vulnerable relationship with a mentor over 8 months. You are making real progress.
Mm-hmm.
And then, suddenly, new orders come down. Your mentor is being deployed overseas or transferred to a base on the exact opposite side of the country. In a normal corporate program, that relationship just dissolves.
Yeah, the mentee is left hanging, and all that progress is lost.
Exactly.
But the Air Force structure refuses to let that happen. When a relocation order comes down, the participants immediately notify their local aunt, and the MAT steps in to catch them.
They don't just say good luck.
No, not at all. They offer immediate structured options.
Yeah.
First, they look at transitioning the bear to distance mentoring using technology, assuming the time zones and operational security allow for it, of course.
But if a mentor is deployed to a high-tempo operational zone, they might not have the time or bandwidth to maintain that connection, right?
Right. And if that is the case, the MAT facilitates a smooth professional termination of the relationship. They ensure closure, so there are no lingering feelings of abandonment.
That's huge.
And then, the crucial step, the MCAT immediately steps in and reallocates a new mentor to the mentee.
Wow. The system catches the people. No one just falls through the cracks because they got new military orders.
Exactly. There's another traditional proverb they reference as a cultural anchor. It basically means we are all in this together, or literally, we are all in the same canoe.
I love that. We're all in the same canoe.
Yes. From the warrant officer of the Air Force, providing top cover, down to the program manager securing the budget, to the TMG training the mentors in emotional intelligence,
right,
and the MAT stepping in to guide a mentee through a mentor's deployment. The entire system is designed so that no individual is ever left to paddle alone.
It is brilliant. So when we step back and look at this entire machine, the mentoring program proves something vital for any organization. It proves that you cannot just rely on good intentions. I mean, you might have a building full of incredible, empathetic people, but good intentions do not scale.
No, good intentions will just burn your best people out.
Exactly. Scaling humanity requires intentional design. You need a sponsor to give it authority. You need a dedicated manager to execute the logistics.
Right.
You need local teams to provide the human heartbeat on the ground. And you need strict training standards to protect the psychological safety of the participants.
Yeah, yeah.
That is how you operationalize human connection without destroying it.
And for you listening, think about your own world, your workplace, your community group, your industry. How many great, passionate initiatives have you seen slowly wither away and die simply because the leaders relied purely on enthusiasm?
Yeah.
Rather than building a solid, unglamorous structure to actually protect and support that enthusiasm.
It is a sobering thought. We have seen how a military organization essentially re-engineered its own hierarchy to carve out a protected space for personal growth.
Yeah, we really did.
But imagine what would happen if the corporate world applied this exact standard to their own mentorship programs. Could a Fortune 500 company actually handle this level of radical transparency?
That's a great question.
Could a civilian corporation build a system where mentorship is strictly, totally separated from performance management and backed by a dedicated volunteer force that holds 100% international accreditation?
Makes you wonder.
It really makes you wonder if the corporate world has a lot to learn from the Air Force. Something to think about. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the source material.